Don't believe the doommongers. In this social media age, it is easy to get washed away on a tide of misinformation and even more sinisterly, disinformation, aka lies. In Winchester, the narrative is that the high street is dying. Not because it is, because a few people feel that way. And their feelings are more important than facts. And don't they love to tell everyone their views? Well, the high street was certainly not dying when 200 people queued for the opening of the Danish lifestyle store, Sostren Green, last Friday. There are so many examples of things that go against the misinformation. Villages are dying. Nobody is bothered by the idea of community, etc., etc. We also report the large turnout for the reopening of the shop in Cheriton, for decades the hub of community life in that lively place. As well as a shop, it has a school, a church, a pub, and even an Amdram group. In Droxford, a petition has been launched to save a community cafe. One of the supposed detrimental changes in Winchester has been the rise in restaurants and cafes in place of shops. This ignores the fact, not the feeling, that Westland's Farm Shop replaced Patisserie Valerie, and the former site of Pisa Express on Bridge Street is poised to become not a shop, which would be nice, but a dentist. There will be people who, because they like grumbling, will complain about that too, just as they did about too many building societies, bookmakers, phone shops, vape shops, and Turkish barbers. In Wanston, the local pub has highlighted a drop in trade with national media coverage that will likely boost trade again for the award-winning Freehouse. No one is arguing that high streets and villages are under pressure and are changing, just as they are more resilient than the doomsayers feel. And I'm your presenter, Steve Russell. The main headlines this week are: battle lines drawn over huge solar farm plans, School of Art to expand its campus, and new photos of the River Park Pavilion work. Before we start on those, your readers today are Jane Harding.
Hello.
Myself, Steve Russell, and Noel Thorpe-Tracy and Heather Thorpe-Tracy, who have been delayed, so we're continuing until they get here. Battle lines drawn over huge solar farm plans. Local residents have criticised plans to build a massive solar farm near Wickham. Conrad Energy has applied to Winchester City Council for permission for 63 hectares of solar panels across 10 parcels of land at Titchfield Lane. The application also includes the construction of transformer stations, site access, security measures, and landscaping work. According to the application, the solar farm will operate for 40 years. Winchester City Council planners have recommended that the application be approved, with a planning officer report saying the development is recommended for permission as it is considered that the proposal would result in public benefits that outweigh the harm generated. However, the application is being brought before WCC's planning committee due to the number of objections submitted contrary to the planning officer's recommendation. The application has received 25 objections, with objectors raising concerns about loss of green space, encroachment into the countryside, and the size of the site. Three letters of support have also been received by the council, which argue that the site would provide green energy and fit with the landscape. Andrew Hatcher of Botley Road said, "This development raises serious concerns regarding land suitability, environmental impact, and long-term sustainability. The proposed site is landfill land raised, which presents instability risks and historic flood concerns. Environmental Health has already flagged contaminated material, including debris, manure and unknown imported soil, which poses potential hazards if disturbed. Any development on this land must undergo rigorous assessment, as improper handling could have severe environmental consequences. Emma and John Rosling, also at Botley Road, said the proposed development of 170 acres of utility-scale solar infrastructure represents spread piecemeal across a very wide area, represents a significant impact on the landscape and character of the area. This application for a further 170 acres of land, a large part of which is productive farmland, means that this part of the region has almost 500 acres of already approved or in application industrial solar panels, plus three battery storage facilities, two approved and one in application. This part of the district is taking well beyond its fair share of renewable energy applications, and the cumulative effect on all these schemes needs to be taken into account. The application has been supported by Winchester Action on Climate Crisis. In a letter to the council, Wynn ACC said, at 500 megawatts, this represents a much needed contribution to the renewable energy generation of the district and the ambition of a decarbonised electricity grid by 2030. The applicant proposes four locations for this solar farm within the same vicinity, which appears to fit well with the landscape and existing hedgerow screening. This separation reduces the overall visual impact of this large solar farm, and one of those locations involves extending in four directions the existing smaller Raglinton solar farm, which is a good use of an existing connection point to the national grid. WCC's planning committee will decide the application on Wednesday, August the 13th, as the Chronicle goes to press.
And here we have School of Art set to expand its campus. Expansion for the Winchester School of Art is set to begin as a result of the school's growth. The University of Southampton are in the early phases of their Winchester campus design, and options are currently being reviewed for site-wide improvements to enhance the education facilities and open spaces. A public engagement event was held on Wednesday, July the 16th in the Art Cafe to propose the plans and answer any questions or suggestions from residents, students and parents. The emerging development proposals will provide new space to meet the school's growth requirements alongside reconfiguration and improvements to its existing buildings. A University of Southampton spokesman said, "We are sharing early stage proposals for a change to vehicle access to Winchester School of Art and for the possible reconstruction of a new one-story education building within the existing campus grounds. Moving the current vehicle access via Park Avenue to North Walls aims to create a greener, more inviting space for pedestrians. The purpose-built education building would help continue our provision of high-quality teaching, learning and creative opportunities for students. We are keen to hear views of local people about these plans at this initial stage as part of an ongoing collaborative process with the community and our commitment to improve the campus environment." Councillor John Tippett Cooper said, "It's good to see that the Winchester School of Art, part of the University of Southampton, are planning to invest more into the city, as our city's education sector is vital to our local economy and future. These plans appear to show the School of Art looking to develop its engagement with the community, and that is essential. They have a great public-facing cafe next to the park and helpful walking routes through their site, and I hope they encourage the use of these by the wider community. The main campus, located at Park Avenue, was last upgraded in 1999 with the addition of three major buildings designed by local architects to increase student capacity and improve facilities." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the planned building, which is a very modern building on three floors, but a large parking area as well, and paths through, and a lot of trees. Clearly some of these trees are old trees, but new ones have been planned so that they will be an interesting part of the new campus.
New photos of River Park Pavilion work. Work is continuing on the new sports pavilion in River Park in Winchester. The £2.3 million scheme officially began in May, with the old building being torn down and rebuilt for the benefit of communities across the district. New photos show that part of the building's foundation has been completed and that construction of the inner structure is underway. The construction of the new pavilion is being carried out by Management and Construction Services, the City's Council's building contractor. It is hoped that the new pavilion will be used by cricket and rugby players, as well as park runners, and provide a community space. As previously reported, Winchester City Council approved giving £1.67 million to the pavilion project. The group, which aims to build the new facilities in October last year. The majority of the cost of the £2.3 million has come from CIL funding, contributions made by developers when getting planning approval. The council hopes it will be completed between February and March 2026. We now continue with the death notices. Hillier, John Gifford, VMH of Hillier Nurseries, peacefully on the 29th of July, age 90. Hunt, John Benjamin, sadly passed away 26th of July, 2025, age 88, in Melbourne, Australia. Lamble, Simon, John, known as Bear, sadly passed away on the 20th of July, aged 54 years. Morris, Jill Cecilia, passed away at her home in Hillhead on the 24th of July, age 90. Payne Jeffrey has passed away. No other details. Terrell Penelope Heather passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice, 20th of July, after a short illness. Vaughan John, known as Johnny, passed away peacefully on 11th of July. Woodsford, Anthony, known as Tony, passed away peacefully on 23rd of July, aged 80. Bellinger, Grace Elizabeth, passed away at West Holm Nursing Home on 30th of July, aged 88. Brimfield, Jennifer Ann, née Smith, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice, 18th of July, aged 86. Forster, Audrey Mavis, MBE, died peacefully at Basingstoke Hospital, 26th of July, aged 96. Gorman, Francis Patricia, sadly passed away at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 31st of July, aged 63. Hatch, Josephine Ann, sadly passed away 4th of August, 25, aged 92. And that's the death notices.
And Christian comment is, music, the key that opens doors. Last month was the 40th anniversary of Live Aid, a massive worldwide charity concert to raise funds for famine relief in Ethiopia. The BBC broadcast a fascinating three-part documentary telling the story of how a hard-hitting news report in October 1984 led to the release of Do They Know It's Christmas? The charity single, which raised millions in aid, captured the public's attention and led to the memorable day in July 1985. The campaign was driven by Bob Geldof, an artist turned activist who demonstrated a basic humanity, a wild imagination, and a stubborn persistence to get things done. Live Aid was hugely formative for me personally, and this is Nigel Hemming, the senior pastor of the Winchester Vineyard Church. As a 15-year-old, I saw music, creativity and communication used to get a powerful message across and effect significant change. Before the internet or DVDs, live performance shows were rare, and popular music on TV was mostly mimed. But, broadcast over 10 hours, I watched multiple artists performing their best-known songs for the biggest ever audience. It was all fantastic, but Queen, The Who, Bowie and McCartney completely met the moment with incredible energy. I can trace my 40-year love of U2 back to the moment where frontman Bono departed from both the script and the stage to dance with a crowd member on TV, creating a moment of connection between artist and audience which impacted across the world. For years afterwards, I played and replayed the low-quality music cassette that I had recorded straight out of my parents' VHS player. The third part of the documentary focuses on the Live Aid event 20 years on, where artists progressed from raising cash to raising awareness. Concerts in multiple nations and a powerful campaign persuaded politicians to rewrite history on aid, poverty and debt relief. The G8 leaders, egged on by Geldof and Bono, agreed to cancel £40 billion of debt owed by 18 of the world's poorest countries. They also promised to increase aid to developing nations by a $50 billion a year by 2010, and subsequently fulfilled their promise. As Tony Blair commented, "It was the most extraordinary weekend in my life as Prime Minister, and it was one of the last moments of truly global solidarity that I can remember." Reflecting on the 40-year journey, I'm struck again how music has the endless creative power to change hearts and minds. I marvel with thankfulness at how God uses all kinds of people to bring about all kinds of good in the world, and I fervently pray that the current climate does not put an end to initiatives like Live Aid. As Bono starkly warns at the end of the series, "The 20th anniversary was just a convergence of good fortune and good actors on the world stage, but what's happening now in politics means this anniversary could be a funeral for the last 40 years. If you haven't seen it, check out Live Aid at 40, When Rock and Roll Took on the World, on iPlayer. And that was Nigel Hemming, senior pastor of the Winchester Vineyard Church.
And now we move on to Letters to the Editor. And this one's from Martin Gould, Borden Lane, Borden, Kent. "Heartfelt thanks to the Lifesavers. I am writing to extend my deepest thanks to the extraordinary individuals who came to my aid when I suffered a cardiac arrest on Saturday, July the 5th, around 11 a.m. outside Café Monde in the Square, Winchester. I was enjoying a weekend away with my son, Winchester being a place of great personal significance, having studied at the King Alfred's Teacher Training College in the late 60s, and met my late wife Barbara there. We had visited the cathedral that morning and made a quick stop at the Geese and Hawks before sitting down at the cafe, a favourite of mine. Moments later, I collapsed in my chair. Though I have no memory of what happened next, my son witnessed an astonishing display of compassion, urgency and care. Please forgive us if we have missed any details or misrepresented the timeline of events, but I'm sure you can understand in the situation things happened extremely quickly. A nurse and other customers rushed to my aid, quickly followed by doctors who seemingly appeared out of nowhere. The staff at Café Monde called emergency services. One doctor relayed vital information to 999, while a security guard ran to fetch an AED from the cathedral. A radiologist there with his family performed CPR, asking for help with his children so he could focus on saving my life. Paramedics arrived and used the defibrillator at least twice. Shortly after, the air ambulance landed in the cathedral grounds and stabilised me with a second device, enabling a safe transfer to hospital. Police and security personnel managed the scene with care, and the team at the Giggling Squid provided blankets and cushions for comfort during the chaos. I spent 2 weeks in Southampton University Hospital under the expert care of their staff. I'll be writing to them separately to thank those individuals. I also want to thank the Wessex Hotel, who looked after my children during the hospital visits, a kindness that made all the difference. I'm now recovering well at home, surrounded by children and grandchildren. I cannot believe how fortunate I was to have been surrounded by such people. I owe my life to the compassion, courage and professionalism of the people of Winchester. Though I do not know their names, I hope this letter reaches them. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. That's Martin Gold, Borden Lane, Borden, Kent.
And Dr. Tony Saunders, retired child psychiatrist, writes, strike action. I think the public would have more sympathy with the doctors and nurses if they were to strike about their conditions as well as their pay. Doctors have 5 to 6 years of student debt and nurses have 3 years of debt. Despite the NHS needing more doctors and nurses, I gather some newly qualified doctors and nurses are unable to find jobs. I qualified years ago and despite the low pay and very long hours, we felt valued and were able to apply for positions of our choice. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, seems to be aware of the situation, and I hope that with this knowledge is able to provide constructive solutions and avoid more strikes. And that was from Dr. Tony Saunders, retired child psychiatrist, Main Road, Otterbourne.
This one's from John Airy of Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy. Migrant madness. It never ceases to amaze me how those successive governments will stoop to avoid their responsibilities. It started years ago when we landlords were bombarded with requests to house Polish people, but at the same time and since have been continuously threatened with high fines or imprisonment by successive governments if we ever housed illegal immigrants. They are now begging us to take them. You couldn't make this stuff up. I continue to be approached by councils from other areas, including London, to house these illegal immigrants. I was not only offered a 5-year rental deal to house said immigrants with payment in advance, but was also offered a price from a borough to physically purchase one of my houses. It won't surprise most people that my answer was impossible to print. They could offer me double the current value and I would never sell. I would rather pay double council tax on an empty house than bow down to these cowardly rainbow flag flying councils. That's John Airy, Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy.
And Mary Pearson writes, moral rights. Should Winchester residents who do not use computers and smartphones be excluded from use of their local recycling centre? I believe they should not, and that Hampshire County Council's stated intention to make an internet-only booking a requirement for use of recycling centres is wrong. Surely all council taxpayers have a moral right to use basic amenities such as recycling centres without encountering obstacles such as those planned by HCC. Such obstacles can only increase fly tipping as well as higher cost to the taxpayer to fund the resulting increase by policing. The council may wish to consider an alternative system whereby no booking is required and residents provide proof of residency when entering the centre. This would save public money, including the £200,000 allocated to an external contractor. It would simplify life for council workers and residents alike. Council taxpayers must not be compelled to use technology in order to contribute towards the public good by recycling their goods. This should be encouraged and commended, not obstructed. And that was from Mary Pearson, Manor Close, Winnell in Winchester.
Michael Fielding from Cheriton Road writes, Bone and Gone. Further to Rodney Skinner's letter to the Chronicle on August 7th, Reinald, a monk from Winchester, took an arm bone of St Swithin's to Stavanger, where he went to create a cathedral and he became its first bishop. However, that bone has not been seen for over 400 years. A Norwegian audit in the 1600s could not locate it anywhere. Although we celebrate the day when St Swithin's bones were moved from outside Old Minster to inside the church on the 15th of November 971, The Norwegians mark the actual day of his death, the 2nd of July, 863. It is worth noting that Hampshire has existed since at least 757. Swithin is thought to have been born around 800, probably within the county. Perhaps Hampshire County should adopt July the 2nd for its festivities and leave July the 15th for the church. That's from Michael Fielding, Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And David Hacking writes, halted powers. Thank goodness the police commissioner powers will be postponed in the devolution deal. It was a complete waste of time and money from its outset. I understand from the report that the commissioner's police powers and the governance of the fire authority will eventually come under the umbrella of newly elected mayor's office next year. It sounds good, but mark my words, if the people elect the same old fuddy-duddies, the likes of the ex-PC Donna Jones or the ex-Labour leader Lorna Fielke, nothing will ever change. They both talked the good talk, but no progress was made. Only doing the things required makes change. The people need a vibrant and bold change of direction with somebody who has the guts to challenge the rotten political system created by the left-wing socialists, the pathetic Tory party, the bungee-jumping-led party of the Liberals, and the Looney Tunes Green Party. Not one of those political parties has any idea of what the people are crying out for, let alone doing something about it. Until we come to grips with the corrupt justice system, Mr. Plod the policeman, who for many years is not streetwise and who has been trained to become reactive instead of proactive, you can't fight crime sitting on your backsides in a car. And on top of all that, along comes the new chief constable, Mr. Alexis Boone, and his use of the same old claptrap rhetorical statements of introducing exceptional policing, engaging with purpose with the people to help fight crime. Nothing will change. It will not curb shoplifting and antisocial behaviour, etc. Mr. Boone, we've heard it all before. As I've already mentioned, with the corrupt two-tier justice system, your hands will be tied and your police force will forever be put into confrontation with the general public because of the stupidity of political numbnut politicians, especially in not curbing the unsafe practice of allowing potential illegal immigrant lawbreakers into this country, many of whom are riddled with AIDS and many other diseases from whence they came. The new mayor choice has got to be non-political, a people's choice, and not afraid to change old habits and do the things required to bring back safety on our streets and in our shops. And that was from David Hacking of Southampton.
The next one is Balance Needed from Stephen Percy of Easton. The Times, in a recent front page splash, reported that 1 in 8 of all prisoners were born overseas. This, no doubt, accurate claim is being echoed by government sources and BBC reporting. Are we supposed to be appalled, frightened even? Alas, the full truth is that people born overseas currently make up a little over 1 in 6 in the UK. So, contrary to the implied suggestions, immigrants have a lower propensity to receive a custodial sentence than the indigenous population. As the journalist Adam Schwartz has also pointed out, 1 in 3 doctors in the UK were born outside the UK, as were 1 in 6 nurses, 1 in 5 academics, and 1 in 2 builders. Thank goodness. So where do we go for a sober and balanced assessment of our immigration policy and practice? The Times and other right-wing political parties, I'd caution against it. And that was Stephen Percy from Easton.
And Teresa Skelton writes, trial by jury. So far, nobody has responded in your columns to the very important issues raised by Rose Burns, Chronicle July the 17th, trial by jury. This is an ancient guarantee of our liberties embedded in this country's constitution. Yes, we do have one. Now the government seeks arbitrarily to restrict what has for centuries been regarded as a fundamental right. Magna Carta fully allowed for judgment by our equals. This established trial by jury as custom, In the Bill of Rights, 1689, it became constitutional law, as such upheld in the royal oath sworn by the king at his coronation. No government has any shadow of a lawful right to take it away in the smallest measure. In any case, the issue is not efficiency or expense, which Rose clearly exposes as flimsy pretexts. It is justice. Does anyone think that courts administered by judges and magistrates will deliver this better? There cannot here be the slightest guarantee of impartiality. Without juries, our Crown Courts too will become simple box-ticking agencies in which the administration of statutory texts will take precedence over the true interests of justice. Common sense and fairness, guided by conscience, should be the final determinants of guilt or innocence. These are more likely to be found in a random dozen ordinary men and women than in the judicial appointee of an overweening state, whatever their claims to be independent. In the age of two-tiered justice between the thin end of this wedge. Theresa Skelton, Secretary, Justice and Anti-Corruption Party, Highclose Hyde in Winchester.
A wonderful day, city full of hope and joy. This is from Mark Rowe, Taplin's Close Week. I had an amazing and inspiring day as I shopped around Winchester. I saw Batman. No, I wasn't hallucinating. It was Jacob, the street entertainer dressed as Batman, with his friends off on another adventure. Seeing this made my day, and I thought I would mention it, as this wasn't the only thing I saw that was inspiring. I saw a lady patiently chatting and listening to another lady who seemed lonely. The other lady listened and then helped her across the road. Finally, as I went to give blood, there was a blind man who, even though he's lost his sight, was willing to help his fellow mankind. People, yes, moaning and groaning about where they live, but these three acts were inspiring. Winchester is a wonderful place full of hope and joy, a place that welcomes people from all over the world to both visit and live here. Over thousands of years, Winchester has become a rich tapestry of culture and more. Let's all help and inspire each other and live life to the fullest. Mark Rowe, Taplings Road, Week, Winchester.
And Simon Lever writes, Bridge End. As a regular visitor to the Bridge End Patisserie, I find it terribly sad that it is to be closed, Chronicle, August the 7th. Friendly staff and awesome homemade pastries and cakes. There are so many chain outfits, but the personal experience of enjoying a truly delicious experience accompanied by real coffee. Hopefully the location will not be another hairdresser's or nail salon. That was Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
The next one is Wedding Noise, Richard Mather and Gillian Abbott of Winchester. We wonder how many other readers living in central Winchester had their Saturday night, August the 2nd, interrupted by the ear-splitting band performing at a wedding reception in the Winchester Cathedral grounds. It was difficult to hold a conversation when seated outside above the din of I Predict a Riot and a football favourite, Place Your Hands On, etc., etc., and the attendant whooping and clapping. We understand from the cathedral that the band declined to turn the volume down. Their reassurance that the wedding season is nearly over didn't cut much ice. That's Richard Mather and Gillian Abbott of Winchester. We now move on to Hampshire Chronicle comment. Don't believe the doom mongers. In this social media age where it is easy to get washed away on a tide of misinformation, even more sinisterly, disinformation, aka lies. In Winchester, the narrative is that the high street is dying. Not because it is, but because a few people feel that way, and their feelings are more important than facts. And don't they love to tell everyone their views? Well, the high street was certainly not dying.
And here we have Motoring Down the Ages by Khalid Aziz. And apologise if you can hear the noise of the road drilling outside. There comes a point in every driver's life when the question isn't can I drive, but should I still be driving? It's never a comfortable conversation, but perhaps one we need to have. Now the government wants to step in, but just for the over 70s, suggesting mandatory eyesight testing and perhaps a test aimed at spotting dementia. Eyesight changes are a fact of life and they creep up on you. One year you're reading road signs with ease, the next you're squinting at the menu in the pub. Yet, under current rules, the only time most of us have ever had our vision formally checked for driving is when we first take the test. After that, it's left to self-assessment, which works fine if you're brutally honest with yourself, but less well if you're all, "I'll just manage" sort. That's why proposals for regular eye tests and basic driving competency checks for older drivers keep resurfacing. Not as punishment, but as a safeguard for everyone. A quick health MOT for your driving. Can you see clearly, react promptly, and navigate today's roads confidently? But why single out older drivers? Young drivers, especially those fresh out of the test centre, are statistically more likely to be involved in accidents. Their eyesight may be perfect, but their experience isn't. They've yet to learn that the driver ahead might stop suddenly for a pigeon, or that 40 miles per hour on a twisty country lane can feel like 80. In truth, all age groups have their challenges. Older drivers sometimes find the pace of modern traffic, the glare of night driving, or new road layouts daunting. Younger drivers have quick reflexes, but haven't yet developed an instinctive caution that comes from years behind the wheel. Somewhere between these extremes is the sweet spot. Confident, competent, alert. But we can't assume everyone stays there forever. So, why not treat driving as a skill that needs maintenance, just like the cars themselves? A short, friendly check every few years could help iron out bad habits, update road knowledge, and reassure everyone, including the driver, that they're still up to the job. However, if it feels like the authorities are itching to snatch licenses away, people will dig their heels in. If it's framed as a way to keep people driving safely for longer, attitudes might soften. Make eye tests free or heavily subsidised. Offer optional refresher drives at local test centres. In rural Hampshire, where losing your licence can mean losing your independence, that approach could keep communities connected without compromising safety. We certainly shouldn't let the conversation start and end with the over 70s. A follow-up for new drivers 6 months after passing could work wonders. A chance to catch overconfidence before it sets in and to tackle the questions they didn't think to ask at the time. Middle-aged drivers too can slide into complacency, lulled by years without an incident. And what about those often middle-aged, this is B S, which I think we won't pronounce, who believe their journeys are so important that they aggressively tailgate you when you're already at the legal speed limit. A quick check-in might just jog the memory about courtesy mirror use, speed awareness, or that indicator level they're apparently forgotten exists. Road safety isn't about pitting one generation against another. It's about recognising that none of us drives in a vacuum. We all share the same roads, the same risks, and the same responsibility. A bit of regular upkeep for both car and driver benefits everyone. Whether you're 17 in a souped-up hatchback or 77 in a beige saloon, the road doesn't care about your birth certificate. It cares about your eyes, your reactions, your awareness, and your ability to tell the difference between the brake pedal and the accelerator. In short, if you can't see it, can't stop for it, or can't work out what it is, you probably shouldn't be driving towards it.
Right, now we're on to Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. Football fan books in. There's a picture of Liam Harding here. A local football enthusiast has published a book about watching the sport across the county, including the ups and downs of Winchester City FC. Liam Harding's book, called Basingstoke Town FC, The Team for Me, goes beyond his local realms of football, approaching the other side of the River Itchen. Alongside supporting Basingstoke, Southampton and Arsenal, the Groundhopper has witnessed the rise and fall of Winchester City, the Citizens in recent times, as well as that of the Dragons and Saints. Mr. Harding, who watches Craig Davis' side from time to time, has documented crucial matches during the club's recent history. A football historian who spent 3 years writing the book goes into detail about when Winchester won the 2022 Southern League Division 1 South Final, beating Bristol Manor Farm 4-1 to become an English 7th tier side for the first time in history. On top of that, documenting the Citizens being relegated from the Southern Premier last season following 2 years in the division, recalling the improvements made to their current home. His book can be ordered from Amazon Marketplace. And he Belgarum continues, a major willow branch collapse. This column mentioned recently the lack of maintenance of the trees and shrubs along the weirs in Winchester. In nearly 40 years, Belgarum has not seen it looking so neglected and overgrown. It could, of course, be coincidence, but the willow near the Wharf Mill has partially collapsed, shedding one of its major branches. Contractors cleared the branches and leaves that were impeding the flow of the river. And there's a picture here of the work completed. And that's all from Belgarum. Lighting up time ends on Friday, 15th August at 05:52 a.m. and begins at 20:26 p.m. On Wednesday, the 20th August, it ends at 0600 and begins at 20:16 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now we continue with further items of general news.
A beating heart of the village reopens, writes Chris Atkinson. There's a picture of a smiling group of people under an arch made up of different coloured balloons, which goes right over their heads and lands back on the other side. It is very much the beating heart of the village. Those were the words of one woman as the Cheriton Village Shop and Post Office in School Road held its grand reopening on Saturday, August the 9th. I don't know if you listen to the Archers, but they've got problems with their village shop too. Dozens of residents attended the event, which saw the shop being officially opened by new owner Keithan Marsh Adash and former operator Gillian Gray-Knight. Following speeches from Mr. Adash and Councillor Neil Bolton, the shop was blessed by Reverend Christopher Durrant before it was opened for customers to enjoy. Mr. Adash said, "We are very happy to sell to the local community. People are very keen, and I think people know now that we are open and working. We did not expect the number of people who came here today. They were very welcoming to us when we first met them at the meeting at the village hall. We believe in this shop and have invested in it. I hope everyone will use the store." As previously reported, the shop was run by Gillian Gray-Knight before she announced its closure in March. Mrs. Gray-Knight attended the reopening as a special guest, cutting the ribbon. She said, "Good luck to them. I had to close the shop and they took it on. They tell me they have all the experience they need, and that should stand them in good stead. I wish them well. I am happy that I don't have to get up early on a Saturday to do the papers." Liz Clarkson from Cheriton Parish Council said, "I think it is an asset. One of the reasons we chose to move here when we left London 35 years ago is that the village had a school and a village shop. The kids would walk here, and it will help them learn road safety, and they could buy sweets with their pocket money. It is so valuable and so many people use it. We have a lot of older people, so we need to have this. It is very much the beating heart of the community." Reverend Christopher said, "It's great that people are going in and shopping there, and the staff are working so hard. It's great to see people lined up outside. I walk into the village and people are there." Members of the public were also enthusiastic about the shop. Lisa Smith said, "I have used the shop every day for 27 years and I will continue to do so. I am very happy that it has not closed, as I am a non-driver. I was bereft when I heard it would close. We can't do without it."
Commemorating 80 years since Hiroshima, an event was held by the mayor of Winchester to mark the 80th anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima and nuclear disarmament. The annual event, as part of the Mayor for Peace initiative, took place on Wednesday, July the 6th, to commemorate the anniversary of the first atomic bomb in Japan. Abbey House, the official residence of current mayor, Councillor Sudaka Ahwal, hosted the event as a remembrance of the devastation that the bombing caused in 1945. Councillor Ahwal said, "It was a pleasure to welcome representatives from local councils, faith communities, partner organisations and community groups, all of whom have played a vital part in supporting the Mayors for Peace initiative since Winchester joined the UK chapter in 2019, to Abbey House to mark the 80th anniversary of the first use of nuclear weapons in warfare. This was a valuable opportunity not only to reflect and remember, but also to look ahead with hope. Nuclear disarmament is crucial. People need to remember the power it has and realise that we need to work together to put a stop to it for the greater good of our future and especially for the younger generations." The event began with the reading of Kazumi Matsui's mayoral speech that was shared from Hiroshima during the early hours of Wednesday, July the 6th, read by Eleanor Bell, the former mayor. Various groups who advocate for peace across all sectors of the world were welcomed to the stage to share their ethos and values, with speakers from Soroptimist International Winchester, Peace Jam, Soka Gakkai International, and Winchester City Sanctuary. The president of the Winchester Rotary, Richard Spalding, spoke about the importance of a proposed peace pole in the city as a way to symbolise and celebrate unity, as well as members of Winchester University coming to discuss their recent project called the Ginkgo Tree Project. A moving reading of a Hibakashu, or survivor's story, was taken from the book Cries for Peace, including first-hand accounts compiled by the youth division of Soka Gakkai, followed by a one-minute silence. Excuse me. Mayors for Peace advocates for the complete disarmament of nuclear weapons, for safe and resilient communities, and for a global culture of peace. The event was held to reflect on the past and look into the future with the promotion of a more peaceful and cooperative world. With the arrival of Ukrainian refugees in Winchester, the annual event has broadened to include the war in Ukraine, hosting a Ukrainian singer that sung about a mother and son's relationship after going to war, but still with a large focus on Japan as the only country that suffered a nuclear attack. Friday, August the 15th, will mark the 80th anniversary of VJ Day, when the war ended.
And here we have fundraising hero behind the rise of the air ambulances. The government said no. The financiers said no. The health minister said there would be no benefit. However, thanks to one man's 10-year battle to establish a national air ambulance service for the UK, there are now 21 air ambulance charities in the UK that provide a vital emergency service, with 37 helicopters covering the whole country. The history of the national network is also the story of the persistence and the foresight of Nigel Webb from Alsford, who saw the importance of a rapid response airborne service and would not rest until it was in place. In 1990, Nigel worked in the City of London where the London Air Ambulance flew over his office every day. At this time, there were only 6 air ambulance helicopters operating for part of the week or during daylight hours only. Nigel realised that people in rural areas would benefit enormously from a rapid response service in the event of an accident in a remote location, and that it needed to be a truly national service. The Swiss model of funding for its air ambulance involves an optional fee of 30 Swiss francs added to individual car insurance premiums. Nigel approached the UK's insurance sector to see if they would consider a similar scheme. Their response was disappointing. "We are not tax collectors. This is something for the government." He had, in fact, already begun engaging with the Department of Health, which was putting every possible obstacle in the way of actually taking any action or providing any funding. Nigel next approached private medical providers, including Bupa. He then contacted the major vehicle breakdown services at that time, Europe Assist, the RAC, and the AA. Of these, the AA was very interested in the idea and organised a conference to bring together all those interested in the project. Meanwhile, the Department of Health had commissioned Professor John Nicol of Sheffield University to evaluate long-term benefits to patient outcomes from existing air ambulance services. In 1995, John Nicol published his report with a predictable conclusion. He could not find any evidence-based figures to prove that the deployment of an air ambulance had any positive bearing on patient outcomes. In 1997, it was decided to set up an umbrella organisation which Nigel registered as a charity, the National Association of Air Ambulance Services, NAAAS. Its primary role was to raise funds at a national level to support regional operators in providing 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year coverage, and ultimately to achieve a nationwide network. Ongoing discussions with Bond Helicopters proved helpful. They advised that the best model would be a leasing model. The cost of leasing and running an air ambulance for 1 year at that time was £1 million. McKinsey recommended that the best option was for the funding from a corporate sponsor to start at full funding and then gradually diminish. So, in the first year, 100% of the funding would be provided, then 75% the following year, then 50%, with the remaining having to be raised from charitable donations. The breakthrough came in March 1998 when Nigel was informed that the AA was considering funding the service. Nigel gave a presentation to the AA's board of directors in February of 1999 asking for £15 million over 3 years to support 4 of the existing air ambulance services, allowing them to operate 7 days a week. The AA agreed to support for the full sponsorship package over the 3 years. Today, the network of individual air ambulance charity provide an extraordinary service to people the length and breadth of the country, handling over 45,000 life-saving missions each year. And in fact, one occurred in one of our letters earlier, I believe you might remember. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance saves on average 3 lives every day of the year. The air ambulance charities are among the most recognised and trusted emergency services in the UK. And this includes a photograph of Nigel Webb and of some Bond helicopters, and a photograph of the London Air Ambulance flying in London, which actually my son himself flew for the London Air Ambulance.
Taking a bit of Chinese culture out to market by Kimberly Barber. And there's pictures of smiling people wearing those traditional Chinese straw hats. It's really nice. A small market selling trinkets on a stall from China has blossomed into a business and community project. Winchester resident Raymond Yang, originally from Jiangsu province in China, launched a stall on Winchester Market in March, selling hand-painted trinkets and cultural items from his home country. The stall quickly grew into Culture X, a business dedicated to sharing Chinese culture through art, language and storytelling. Mr. Yang said, after graduating from university, I was job searching and had difficulty finding one, so I wanted to set something up to share my culture, something I'm passionate about. I decided to do a market stall. It was easy to set up, and I had some very interesting interactions with people in the city. There are people from all over the world here, and they were interested in what I was doing, painting bookmarks, fans and the like, so I thought we should throw a party and set up some workshops, create a community of our own here. Mr. Yang has been supported by Winchester resident Richard Kirker, who praised his vision and energy. Buoyed by the positive response, Mr. Yang is now launching his first series of Chinese calligraphy workshops. The sessions will be held at the Arc on Drury Street, with the first workshop taking place on Saturday, September the 13th from 2 till 4, and there will be additional workshops later in September and October, including an introduction to the evolution of the Chinese language and handwriting, overview of calligraphy tools and writing practice, basic spoken Chinese, and the opportunity to write your name in Chinese. The cost is nearly £30 for adults, and bookings can be made via eventbrite.co.uk. Mr. Yang's market stall will return to Winchester on August the 14th and 15th. Ooh, where are we now? Well, and the 21st and the 22nd, and the 28th and 29th of August. So there's still two times left. For more information, is available.
Council is set to keep two daycare centres open. The county council has decided to continue to run two daycare centres until a new provider is found. The Hampshire County Council is trying to find an external provider to run the services at Chesil Lodge Daycare Centre in Winchester and Newman Court Resource Centre in Basingstoke. If no external provider is found, the council will continue to run the services, and the Deputy Director of Adults Health and Care, Jason Brandon, said at the Cabinet meeting on Friday, August the 8th. The senior council officer said the county council would only withdraw from the delivery of these services once an alternative provider is secure and following a suitable transition and handover period. If a provider isn't found, the county council will continue to deliver the services. It's important to stress that there is no proposal on the table to close these services in that regard. After a public consultation, the initial proposal to potentially close both daycare centres was rejected. Now, with the approval, Hampshire County Council Care and Support will stop operating the older adult daycare centre services at Chesil Lodge and Newman Court in April 2026. Providing a new provider is found. Councillor Stephen Reid, supporting the council's decision, said people should be delighted that a way has been found to keep these services running. The facilities and the services provided at the site are valued, and if we can outsource to another company that can provide these services and save us money, then that would be a win-win.
And drone pictures show full scale of festival. Boomtown 2025, Power of Now saw thousands of festival goers spend the weekend in Winchester. The annual festival saw more than 75,000 people partying away to hundreds of acts on 12 main stages and more than 50 hidden stages, with big names such as the Sex Pistols, Sean Paul, Rudimental, the Wurzels and Hybrid Minds all giving unforgettable performances. This year's Boomtown was a great success. These drone pictures show the full scale of the festival, which started on Wednesday, August the 6th and finished on Sunday, August the 10th. Thousands and thousands of tents show the scale of the festival, and some of the stages had acts playing until 4 a.m. on some nights. Volunteers and staff on the Matterley estate joined together to pick up and clear all of the litter left behind. This is accompanied by a photograph from a drone above, because the weather, of course, was beautiful. And it was an enormous area with, I can't even count the number of stages that there are around the whole area in the Matterley Bowl.
Council pays out £12.7 million in redundancy payments. Hampshire County Council paid out more than £12.7 million in redundancy payments to staff leaving the authority this year. Exit packages have cost the County Council more than £14 million over the past 2 years. Figures published by the government show the authority paid out the fifth most in exit payments across England in 2024-25, behind only Birmingham City Council, Somerset Council, Leeds City Council and Shropshire Council. Liberal Democrat group leader Councillor Keith House said that the frightening figures showed staffing had got totally out of hand at an incredible cost to the taxpayer. A spokesperson for the Conservative-run council said the exit payments increase over the past 12 months reflected a planned and responsible approach to managing the workforce during the exceptional financial pressure the administration is facing. The total sum paid out in the last financial year by Hampshire County Council was £12.765 million across 590 exit packages. This was more than £11 million above the figure for the previous year, 2023-24, when the council paid £1,486 million for 100 packages. The totals include money attached directly to redundancy policies, contributions to pension schemes, and in some cases voluntary ex gratia payments. Councillor House told the local democracy reporting service, "These are frighteningly large numbers that show staffing has got totally out of hand at the County Council, that so many people have been paid off to leave at an incredible cost to the taxpayers." Labour group leader Councillor Kim Taylor said that although the numbers may look alarmingly high, they were largely down to an increase in non-senior staff redundancy schemes and not a case of golden goodbyes. This is a reflection of the need to significantly reduce staffing numbers, she said. Councillor Taylor said it was enormously sad. The County Council had parted ways with so many valuable staff. However, she said, it has had no choice due to a lack of funding. Green Party councillor Malcolm Wallace said that the overall impact of the changes would be a reduction in cost in the current year and a significant reduction in future years. The spokesperson for the County Council said a voluntary resignation scheme held during 2024-25 saw 340 employees leave the organisation, saving £14 million annually in ongoing staff costs. The County Council stated that restructuring services improved efficiency and contributed to the overall number of staff leaving the organisation. The spokesperson said these exit payments were part of a carefully managed programme to reshape services, reduce costs and protect frontline delivery. Every case was assessed to ensure services remained safe and effective. This approach has helped the County Council continue to make best use of public funds while prioritising essential care and support for Hampshire's most vulnerable children and adults.
Town to lose hospital bus after funding axed. The Parish Council's attempt to save a vital bus route has failed. Despite the efforts of the District and County Councillors, the 61 bus route between Winchester and Eastleigh will be axed. The service will stop on August 30th, 2025, after Hampshire County Council withdrew funding. This means residents of Colden Common, Twyford, Albrook and Boyart Wood will lose direct bus links to Eastleigh and the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Colden Common will be left with only the 69 service, which runs between Fareham and Winchester. The Parish Council had been exploring the possibility of setting up a community bus service to Eastleigh. This would have been supported by Hampshire County Council and funded through the Rural Transport Fund. Stagecoach also proposed a reduced 61 service to Eastleigh using a bus outside of school travel times. For this to work, Stagecoach requested funding from local parish councils. Coldon Commons Parish Council took the lead in discussions on shared funding with Twyford, Albrook and Boyer Wood. Winchester City Council offered financial support, but Eastleigh Borough Council did not. However, on the day, a meeting was set up to seek backing from Coldon Common Parish Council. They were informed that Stagecoach would not proceed with any plans to keep the 61 route. We recognised Hampshire County Council's We recognise Hampshire County Council's problem by cutting essential services. This decision is a serious setback for our community, cutting direct access to Eastleigh Town and Winchester Hospital, and directly undermines urgent communities to provide sustainable, accessible public transport. Hampshire County Council must urgently reconsider and work with operators and parish councils to reinstate the service without delay.
Cafe's petition to secure a future. A Hampshire community cafe has launched a petition to save itself after it was given a notice to quit. Wilfrid's Cafe, which operates from the annex of St Mary and All Saints Church, Droxford, says that it was served with a notice by its licensors, the Friends of Droxford Church, FODC. The cafe's board has said it will try to change the licensors' minds, but has warned that if they are unsuccessful, then the cafe will cease on Tuesday, September the 2nd. Until then, the cafe has launched an online petition to help it to try to stay open. A post on Wilfrid's Cafe Facebook page said, "It is with huge sadness that we have to let you know that Wilfrid's Cafe has been given notice to quit by our licensors, the Friends of Droxford Church. While they have plans to maintain a cafe facility of the same premises, the Wilfrid's board are doing all in our power to reach out and have them, or the church, reconsider this decision. However, there is a real possibility that Wilfrid's Cafe, as you know and love it, will cease to be on September the 2nd. We have been hugely proud of how we have been able to support our community in the form of our annual grants. Over the last 4 years, we have put over £35,200 into local projects. This has helped our schools, clubs, scouts, village facilities like the hall and the phone box library, the bell ringers, Scarecrow Festival, individuals and the church, which in addition to benefiting through the grants is also recipient of donations of up to 70% of its fuel costs, and our presence there has drawn more people into this beautiful building. It has taken a lot of effort from our amazing volunteers for us to grow into the welcoming space that is Wilfrid's, and we all want to continue if at all possible. While we do not want to create any discord within our community, we would be grateful to hear from you if you support us in our quest to remain. We can only hope that your affection for what we have built here may help sway the powers to reconsider their decision. Please either pop into the cafe to sign our petition or go to our online petition directly at iPetitions." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the village of Droxford with the phone box library on the left-hand side provided by the community cafe.
Postcode politics of IVF threatened the family dream. And there's a picture of a mother with a very chubby, smiling baby in her arms. A Hampshire couple's dream of starting a family was almost shattered after a series of medical setbacks and postcode politics. Stacey Poulter, 37, and her husband Alastair were told they had only weeks left to qualify for NHS-funded IVF treatment. Their journey to parenthood was hindered by Stacey's excruciating pelvic pain and an unexpected endometriosis diagnosis. However, despite those hurdles, the couple have now welcomed their daughter, Effie, into the world and are speaking out about the emotional toll of infertility. Stacey, who works as the head florist for a major film production company, met Alistair on the set of Dumbo in 2017, and the couple began trying for a baby shortly after their wedding in 2021. But their attempts were met with a series of setbacks, including Stacey's extreme pelvic pain, which was initially misdiagnosed as an ectopic pregnancy. After months of fighting for answers, Stacey was finally properly diagnosed with endometriosis, a condition that causes chronic pain, inflammation, and fertility issues. After surgery to remove the endometrial tissue, doctors advised the couple they had a short window to conceive naturally. But by the end of 2022, they were still struggling. The couple were eventually granted one NHS-funded IVF cycle, but they only had weeks to spare due to Stacey's age. She said, "In our area, you have to be under 35 to receive NHS funding for IVF, and I was only 2 months away from my 35th birthday." Their first IVF attempt in May 2024 was unsuccessful, leaving them devastated. After a second failed embryo transfer, they were recommended an endometrial receptive array, known as ERA, test, and that helped pinpoint the best time for a successful embryo transfer. So their third transfer in June 2024 was indeed successful, and they welcomed Effie into the world in January 2025. Stacey said, "Effie has transformed our lives. It was a lot to go through, both physically and mentally, but we are so grateful that it worked for us in the end." The couple's journey was further complicated by Alistair's cancer diagnosis during Stacey's pregnancy. He had to have two toes amputated, but despite these challenges, the couple are now enjoying life with their daughter.
A popular festival is returning. A popular festival with artisan stalls and live music is returning to Hampshire Village. The Taste of Wickham Festival will take place on Sunday, September the 14th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m, offering a day of free activities. With more than 80 artisan stalls, live music and performances, children's entertainment, and a wide range of local food and drink, the festival has something for everyone. Stalls will offer food from Greek gyros to Meon Valley, hog roast, New Forest shortbread, to the village bakers, handcraft cakes, to charcuterie. I don't know what charcuterie is. Local makers will be showcasing their crafts, jewellery plants, homeware and more. On the main stage, visitors can enjoy music and entertainment with sea shanties from the Force 10 Shanty Crew, tunes from Spinnaker Brass, local community choirs, a charity fashion show, and a family circus performance. There will also be acoustic performances on the patio at the Square Cow throughout the day. A whole area of the festival is to be devoted to family fun, including circus skills, hands-on crafts, and meeting a real-life princess, all for free. The Bubbles Man and his giant bubble shows, circus performers throughout the day, face painting, and small rides for little ones will also be available. Entry is free with park and stride parking.
And here we have a gentle giant with a heart of gold legacy. A young man from Winchester raised thousands for charity before dying from an incurable brain tumour. George Hatt, 25, from Stanmore, was diagnosed with a grade 4 glioblastoma, an incurable brain cancer in 2024 after an MRI scan. George and his sister, Jess Hatt, quickly became strong advocates for brain cancer charities, working alongside the Brain Charity to raise money and awareness for the cause. Hats off to George, and that's hats with two T's, which is the same as the spelling of their surname. Hats off to George was a group set up on Facebook following George's diagnosis and has since gained over 1,000 followers and supporters. Jess said, "Since launching our fundraising journey, we have raised over £25,000 supporting both George's bucket list and the Brain Tumour Charity. The first fund day raised more than £5,000, which led to the Hatt family partnering with other organisations to host football matches, charity balls, golf tournaments, quiz nights, sporting events, sponsored walks, and even had the chance to turn on the Christmas lights at the end of 2024. In 2025, they hosted Winchester's Walk for Change, walking the streets of Winchester, campaigning for change for brain tumours and raising funds for the Brain Tumour Charity. Jess said, "In the weeks before George passed, we also started a campaign to collect essential items for the hospice, and with thanks to the incredible generosity of our community, we received donations worth over £2,000 to help Mountbatten continue their vital work. George's bucket list was ambitious. He was able to have a private tour of Mercedes World, meet Rob Beckett, attend Boomtown, and was gifted holidays. For the things he couldn't go out to do, his family brought experience to him by hosting a personal festival, a home cinema night, and buying his favourite Lego. To keep George's legacy alive, Jess and her family will continue fundraising in his name. She aims to carry Hats Off to George forward by supporting others in similar situations, raising money for their bucket lists and donating to cancer charities in his memory. George was admitted to Mountbatten the weekend of Father's Day and remained there for 5 weeks until he passed away peacefully on July the 16th, surrounded by his family. His funeral service will take place on Chesil House, Winchester, on Thursday, August the 21st at 2:30 p.m. and donations to Mountbatten, Hampshire and the Brain Tumour Charity can be made at www.steelsfunerals.co.uk." And there are a couple of lovely photos supplied by Jess Hatt, his sister, of George with a patch over one eye but a huge beam on his face.
Festival celebrating City's past is to be the biggest and boldest yet. Kimberly Barber writes, "A festival celebrating Winchester's past and belonging to the city is set to be the biggest and boldest yet this year," organisers have announced. The 10th anniversary of Winchester Heritage Open Days is set to take place from September the 12th to the 21st. With a programme of free talks, tours, exhibitions, performances and experiences. And this year's theme is architecture. The festival is backed by the Winchester Business Improvement District, known as BID. And Paul Spencer, their chief executive, said, "Winchester is steeped in history, and that's why this festival is so important for our city and district, celebrating heritage and providing opportunities for local people and visitors to enjoy an extensive and diverse programme of guided walks, expert talks and behind-the-scenes tours. I'm especially looking forward to the Building Memories exhibition at Design Engine Architects and discovering more about the historic buildings that are still home to local businesses, like P&G Wells, which could well be the oldest bookshop in England." Winchester BID is a long-standing supporter of the festival, helping to boost visibility, footfall and vibrancy in the city's centre. More than 140 events will be delivered by local community groups, businesses, charities and cultural organisations. They'll include backstage tours, bookshop pop-ups and visits to the cathedral vaults and city walls. The Hampshire Chronicle will also be taking part and holding an open day at its office in Upper Brook Street from 10 a.m. until midday on Friday, September the 12th. For more information on the festival, visit Winchester Heritage Open Days, all one word, all lowercase, .org.
And I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts this week and to copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers. Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Steve Russell. Apologies for the rather clunky computer work this week. I think I've got a few things wrong. But goodbye and have an enjoyable week. When you have finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.